The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
We have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Now, they did it for Obama as well. You heard it straight from the office of President-elect Biden. There he is, a few weeks before the election. The most extensive voter fraud organization in history. We thank you for joining us on this Thanksgiving edition, this Thanksgiving Kraken, you could call it, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you, too, for Andrew Locher. He sat in yesterday with a live program from our Edmonds studio. So lots and lots to get to on today's show, which is unusual for the Friday during a Thanksgiving holiday. Generally, there's not much news. Well, that's not the case this time around. Since I last spoke to you 48 hours ago, so much has happened. General Mike Flynn, he was fully pardoned by the President of the United States. You had, I believe it was Wednesday afternoon, that Pennsylvania Republican legislature hearing where Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis brought forward some of the witnesses that they've gotten sworn affidavits from. And they were there testifying before the House Republicans and the state senators there in Pennsylvania. And I believe two more of these kinds of hearings are set for next week, Arizona and Michigan. That'll be happening on Monday and Tuesday. I think it's Michigan, but I know it's two hearings. I heard that that announcement previously. So in addition to that, of course, Wednesday night, you had Sidney Powell's Kraken filed in Georgia and in Michigan as well, which was a bit of a surprise. I told you on Wednesday that we ought to keep our eyes on Georgia, and that certainly is something we want to continue to do. The president just announced he's going to have a rally in Georgia on Saturday night, so you can expect the numbers for that to be huge. So that's Georgia. But as far as the two lawsuits, the two complaints filed by Sidney Powell's team, I think the one that got our interest was Michigan, and we'll come to some of the highlights of that here in just a bit as well. Also on Wednesday, we heard from the 11th Circuit. They granted Lynn Wood. We've played some clip. Excuse me. We played some clips from him on the program previously. He's filing his own lawsuit, separate and apart from Trump's legal team, separate and apart from Sidney Powell, and he's basically taking issue with the Georgia Secretary of State and the Georgia courts and such. Changing the rules leading up to the election, and the rules can only be changed by the state legislature. So his case was dismissed at the local level. It's on up to the 11th Circuit now, and they have granted his wish to have an expedited hearing. So he was very excited about that. Mr. Wood was on Wednesday evening. And then also this week, you have news out of Nevada. A Nevada judge, this is, I guess, at the district level, a judge set December 3rd as a date to hear the election fraud evidence. Lots and lots of reports coming out of Nevada that, there, and of course, you know about that local election in the Las Vegas area that was basically, they decided they have to redo it because there was so much confusion. And this, of course, is a, well, this is something that the president has been quite interested in as well. So that goes on next week. And then amid all of this, you have President Trump's Thanksgiving press conference yesterday. That went on for over 20 minutes. Quite a lot of fireworks coming out of that exchange. This was the first time, really, since the election that he's taken a lot of questions. So as you might imagine, he had lots of fiery things to say. So that and maybe more we'll be getting to on today's program if we have the time. That's been a struggle of late to fit everything in. I want to begin with, again, speaking of things happening just in the last 48 hours, I want to begin with another late night event, late Wednesday night, when the Supreme Court struck down Governor Cuomo's worship service ban. Comrade Cuomo, if you haven't kept up with it, he's got all of these zones established in New York. If you're in a red zone, you've got to keep your religious gatherings down to 10 people or less, he says. And if it's in the orange zone, you can have 25 people maybe. Well, the Supreme Court decided that that wasn't constitutional. Let me take you first to the Emmy Award-winning governor of New York and what he had to say about these various zones a few weeks ago, or this might have been last week. Clip 13.
We have a number of announcements of yellow zones, orange zones, red zones. Remember what they are. Yellow zone in New York City is 2.5, reduces house of worship gatherings. Red zone reduces house of worship to 25%. Mass gatherings prohibited. Businesses essential only. Dining takeout only. Schools closed.
Okay, so the Supremes on Wednesday night decided that this violated the First Amendment's protection of the free exercise of religion. They said, no, if there can be gatherings for other sorts of activities, but not for religion, that's not constitutional. That violates the First Amendment. Now, it was a 5-4 decision, and you probably know where I'm going with this, because the Supreme Court has dramatically changed or shifted just in the last couple of months. John Roberts, as he has been doing in recent months, he sided with the three liberal justices, and he wrote in his dissent, "It's significant. It's a significant matter to override determinations made by public health officials concerning what is necessary for public safety in the midst of a deadly pandemic." That's Mr. Roberts, the Chief Justice, saying, look, if the public health officials say it, it's got to be the law. This is just like what Mr. Armstrong said in the healing booklet. You have people in the medical profession that in some cases have more power than the president of the United States. And there's John Roberts basically saying, look, just public health officials, period. If they say it, then, well, we can't reverse it. Now, though, now you see Mr. Roberts is in the minority. He's been the top dog in recent months. It's not so anymore. Listen to what Neil Gorsuch said in his opinion regarding Governor Cuomo. He said, so at least, according to the governor, it may be unsafe to go to church, but it is always fine to pick up another bottle of wine, shop for a new bike, or spend the afternoon exploring your distal points and meridians. Who knew public health would so perfectly align with secular convenience? That's Neil Gorsuch developing some of that wicked wit that the late Antonin Scalia had. But what a change. What a change. Here's how the Emmy Award-winning governor of New York reacted to the Supreme's decision on Wednesday night, clip 17.
So I think this was really just an opportunity for the court to express its philosophy and politics. It doesn't have any practical effect. Why rule on a case that is moot and come up with a different decision than you did several months ago on the same issue? You have a different court. And I think that was the statement that the court was making.
You have a different court, and it made a different decision than it would have made just a few months ago. Mr. Cuomo went on to say, we know their ideology, so This is all, in his mind, this is all politics. With him, it's never about politics. There was a statement he made, I believe, yesterday or the day before as well, where he said, I'm not concerned about politics. I'm concerned about your life. I'm concerned about saving lives. I want you to listen to what the New York Times said just this morning about this change in the Supreme Court. It says, a few minutes before midnight on Wednesday, the nation got its first glimpse of how profoundly President Trump had transformed the Supreme Court. What we're seeing is a profound transformation. And of course, who's been telling you about this, even going back to 2 years ago, that January edition of the January 2019 of the Trumpet magazine? Tomorrow's News Today, this is from the New York Times, it says, just months ago, Chief Justice John Roberts was at the peak of his power, holding the controlling vote in closely divided cases and almost never finding himself in dissent. But the arrival of Justice Amy Coney Barrett just last month, which put a staunch conservative in the seat formerly held by the liberal mainstay, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, meant that it was only a matter of time before the Chief Justice's leadership would be tested. Only a matter of time. Is this a sign of maybe some future rulings to come in the next few weeks? Well, this is from the New York Times. This is from Andrew Cuomo. And this, my friends, is why they're, never mind what they say or what they're trying to blot out, never mind the fact that they ignore Sidney Powell's filings on Wednesday night, never mind that they will not get into the evidence. They are concerned. They are worried. Yes, they are. It says here, on Wednesday, Justice Barrett dealt the Chief Justice a body blow. She cast the decisive vote in a 5-4 ruling that rejected restrictions on religious services in New York imposed by Governor Cuomo to combat the coronavirus, shoving the Chief Justice into dissent with the court's three remaining liberals. It goes on and talks about how that the ruling was at odds with earlier ones just a few months ago. It says further on, Wednesday's ruling was almost certainly a taste of things to come. That's what I want you to think about for a moment. Wednesday's ruling was almost certainly a taste of things to come. Now think about the prophecy in Amos 7, verses 12 and 13, where it talks about the king's chapel, of course, referring to the religious support or the support from traditional Christianity that the Jeroboam type receives. But then also it says, and it is the kingdom's court. That's how it should read there at the end of verse 13, which, as my father explained back in January of 2019, it's talking about a court that favors the Jeroboam administration. He said this specifically, I believe this non-religious entity, the kingdom's house, is referring to the United States Supreme Court. Almost 2 years old, that quote. Almost 2 years old. Tomorrow's News Today. Now, let me bring you right up to the latest Trumpet magazine. This will be in the January 2021 issue. That's hard to believe, just to say 2021. My father says this, less than 2 months before the election, on the evening of September 18th, 2020, something remarkable happened. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Her death shocked the nation and caused a political and judicial sensation. It also created an opportunity for President Trump. Within days, the president nominated Amy Coney Barrett to fill the vacant seat on the court. Barrett is a constitutional originalist and very conservative. She's confirmed on October 26th. And then my father says, what a remarkable turn of events. What a remarkable turn. She's the third one that President Trump was able to appoint in just 4 years. And my father said that he felt like this marked the fulfillment of that prophecy in Amos 7. He said, Justice Barrett's nomination could prove decisive in this election and to Mr. Trump remaining president. That was in the Trumpet Magazine, or is in the current issue of the Trumpet Magazine. It was discussed, in fact, in that Trumpet brief, just 2 days after the media anointed Vice President Biden. They anointed him on November 7th. My father had a message that very day. I played some clips from that right after. I have a feeling we'll be playing a few more of those clips in the weeks ahead. In any event, what a shift. A shift that could prove decisive. Now, you think about these lawsuits filed on Wednesday night, Georgia, Michigan, and the fact that even if they ignore this, and they're trying to do that, they're trying to say that the Pennsylvania hearing with the state legislators, it was just a circus. Well, those Republicans hold a majority, so they might have something to say. Never mind what the liberal leftist media said on November the 7th. Mr. Trump's press conference, by the way, yesterday, he over and again talked about how that this was a fraudulent, rigged election. And at one point, he talked about how this would be quite a lot different if the media was just honest. Here's clip four.
If the media was honest in this country, which, you know, for the most part, they're not, this would never have happened. This has taken place. This fraud has taken place. If the media were honest, this would never, ever have happened.
Can you imagine if after all of this fraud, they went after this story as aggressively, as obsessively as they did the Russia collusion hoax? In that case, there was no evidence. There was no evidence. Here, the evidence is all around them. And it's like they're groping in the dark. They're blind. They're blind. And it's willful. They don't want to see it. They don't want to look into it. Here's the Georgia complaint, an overview. It says, this is the opinion, the fraud was executed by many means, but the most fundamentally troubling, insidious, and egregious is the systematic adaptation of old-fashioned ballot stuffing. It has now been amplified and rendered virtually invisible by computer software created and run by domestic and foreign actors for that very purpose. Mathematical and statistical anomalies rising to the level of impossibilities, as shown by affidavits of multiple witnesses, documentation, and expert testimony, evince this scheme across the state of Georgia. This scheme, an artifice to defraud, affected tens of thousands of votes in Georgia alone and rigged the election in Georgia for Joe Biden. Now, Sam went through the Georgia complaint, and I think he's gotten through much of the Michigan one too. I went through the Michigan one yesterday. And some of the things that she said about Dominion, the voting machines, is just devastating. And we'll get to Michigan a little bit later. In Georgia, we both felt like it was just a little bit weaker there. Some of the evidence with respect to Dominion is circumstantial. Some of the things that you've even heard on this program, some of the things that have been reported in the New York Times years ago, some of the things that Carolyn Maloney sounded the alarm about back in 2006. So if you've been following this program, you'd be familiar with some of the points that she brings out in her opinions. And I'm sure, again, if the major media were to look into it even at all, which they won't, most of them, but if they did, they'd say, well, there's still no hard evidence. Where's the hard evidence? But imagine, like the president said, imagine what would be discovered. Imagine what would turn up if the media were just honest. If Sidney Powell and Donald Trump actually had a little help and assistance coming from the corrupt media, they don't get it. They certainly don't get much support there. There's another affiant, which is someone that signs the sworn statement, the affidavit, talking about the chain of custody documents that are supposed to follow these voting machines wherever they go, how that they were tampered with in one precinct. They were told to sign this document, the election officials, saying that they received the machines even though they didn't arrive until 2 days later. And when they did arrive 2 days later, they were unsealed, unlocked. And the serial numbers didn't match the documentation. That's all revealed in Sidney Powell's complaint. She also has this section about the pipe burst. You remember that happening, I believe, in Fulton County? They were all counting away. And then if you were watching the election coverage, you heard about, remember when all the states got together and said, well, we've got to stop counting. In Atlanta, what they said is that, well, we've got a pipe burst and some flooding, so we've got to stop the counting and everyone's got to go home. We now know that everyone went home except for a handful of officials that were still in there, very, very busy. Oh, yes, they were still counting. But all the poll watchers, all the observers were gone. And for what? Not a pipe burst. There was a toilet that overflowed in one of the bathrooms. A toilet. This is in a big arena that they were having the counting going on. A toilet overflow. You can see the quote right from the opinion on your screen if you're watching the feed. A toilet overflow that occurred earlier on November 3rd. So they say, hey, everybody go home. Nonetheless, the opinion says their first six people, then three people, stayed until 1:05 a.m. working on the computers. That's from the Georgia Kraken, released Wednesday night. All right, the first opinion that Sidney Powell filed. Now, the strongest point, and it might be the case with both complaints, but the strongest point, and this is what Rudy Giuliani's team is focused on, is just the constitutional violations or the lawlessness from state officials and just the voter fraud itself happening in the old-fashioned way. For example, the State Board of Elections issued, this is in Georgia, issued a rule that counties could process the mail-in ballots 3 weeks ahead of the election, and this violated a statute that had passed by the state legislature. So they allowed this counting early on. And of course, if they were able to count so far ahead of time, then one wonders why it took so long after the election. Well, it's because of the rampant fraud that was going on. This is from the complaint. In plain terms, the statute clearly prohibits opening absentee ballots prior to the election day, while the rule authorizes doing so 3 weeks before the election day. There's no reconciling this conflict. And then this has just been true with Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan. These Secretary of States or these judges, these courts, in the case of Pennsylvania, just getting in there and changing the rules. And the people have no say about it. And the legislatures have no say about it. In the Georgia filing, Sidney Powell alleges that 96,000 ballots are not legal. They were either cast by non-existent people or illegally harvested. Now, Donald Trump lost, or he's behind, we should say. He's behind in Georgia by less than 13,000 votes. And she at least comes up with 96,000 that are illegal. Between 16,000 and 22,000 people received mail-in ballots that did not request them. She says, according to her opinion, more than 20,000 votes came in from people who registered that they no longer lived in Georgia. There was one point where she said 900 military ballots came out of Fulton County, and all of them, 100% of them, were for Joe Biden. 900 military ballots. This is not happening. Not by that percentage, 100-0. That's like Peter Strzok world. He's going to lose 100 million to 1. 900-0. Fulton County also had this this stat. This is brought out, and it's almost hilarious. It's so ridiculous. The entire county of about 1 million people, they rejected eight mail-in ballots right across the board, and other counties right around these heavily populated areas rejected zero. Now, coming into, this is brought out in her opinion or her complaint, coming into it, the most recent election before November 3rd, the percentage of mail-in ballots rejected was 0.15%, which is not much, but when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of ballots, it would certainly add up to more than eight. She says the signature rejection rate for absentee ballot applications was 0.00167%, only 30 statewide. It says Hancock County in Georgia, population 8,348, just a tiny little county, hardly any people, they rejected nine absentee ballots for the signature mismatch. Fulton County, where Atlanta is, they rejected eight. And you keep hearing President Trump saying, we've got to get in there and look at the signatures. Otherwise, the recount is worthless. The recount will tell you nothing. A tiny little county rejecting five, or rather nine ballots because of signature mismatches. And in all of Fulton County, you had eight mail-in ballots rejected. Just unbelievable. Michigan. This was filed, both of these, by the way, were filed in the bigger cities areas, which means they're probably going to be dismissed or rejected by a liberal judge, hopefully sooner rather than later, just looking at it from Sydney's perspective, because she filed around Atlanta and then she filed around Detroit. But with respect to the Michigan filing, as I said, I feel like this is much more effective on the subject of Dominion, the voting machines, and so on. This is from the NOQ report, someone named J.D. Rucker. He said, the Michigan lawsuit is where Dominion voting systems gets fully exposed. There are implications in here that should not only cast doubt on any jurisdiction that uses the terminals or software, but should also make us question anyone willing to put it in their state. The Michigan lawsuit is the Dominion killer. Seriously, the company probably won't survive if this lawsuit makes it to the Supreme Court. And it will open the door for other states to be examined more closely. This is the Kraken we were expecting. This is it. And it may be refined, it may be added to, really it's pretty, and I know people are making a big deal, especially out of the Georgia filing, of the typos in there. And I've read some interesting theories about why there are so many. In any event, if this is refined and focused all the more as it works its way upline, it's remarkable just to think about what has been compiled in just 2 weeks' time. Even the evidence that that Rudy and Jenna put on display on Wednesday afternoon in that Pennsylvania hearing. This is just after 2 weeks of work and after losing a few lawyers because of intimidation and such. And then with no help, zero help from the media. And so far as we know, zero help from the Justice Department as well. And yet you have a president who will not quit. He made that quite obvious in yesterday's press conference. And the press just key in on one little statement. Well, but if the electors vote for Joe Biden, I mean, would you refuse to move out of the White House? And at one point he said, well, of course not. I'm not going to demand to stay here. But the entire, and so they'll focus on that. But then the entire 20 minutes, he's saying this is rigged. It was stolen. There was cheating right across the board. And it's going to be overturned. Sidney Powell says, there is incontrovertible physical evidence that the standards of physical security of the voting machines and the software were breached, and machines were connected to the internet in violation of professional standards, which violates federal election law on the preservation of evidence. That's from paragraph 9. Listen to this from paragraph 11. She's referring to this expert witness, someone named Russell James Ramsland. He's concluded that Dominion alone is responsible for the injection or fabrication of 289,866 illegal votes in Michigan that must be disregarded. This is almost twice the number of Mr. Biden's purported lead in the Michigan vote, without consideration of the additional illegal, ineligible, duplicate, or fictitious votes due to the unlawful conduct outlined below. This is just Dominion, in other words. And thus, by itself, is grounds to set aside the 2020 general election and grant the declaratory and injunctive relief requested herein. On this alone, this is grounds to dismiss the result, to prevent the certification of this count. Dominion, by the way, came out with a statement, I believe, yesterday or early this morning in response to these two complaints, calling themselves the gold standard for transparent and accountable voting equipment. That's why they emptied out all their offices. The gold standard in transparency. That's from their statement. It says, this is from the Dominion statement, Sidney Powell's wild and reckless allegations are not only demonstrably false, they have led to stalking, harassment, and death threats to Dominion employees. That is, if you can find them anywhere. Okay, and then they're claiming victim status here. Dominion! Dominion is. It says, this criminal activity has been duly reported to the appropriate law enforcement agencies, and we intend to hold Ms. Powell and those aiding and abetting her fraudulent actions accountable for any harm that may occur as a result. I mean, if one of our employees is harmed by this, we're going to hold her accountable. But where are their lawsuits? Where are their complaints? As I've said before, they're not going to go there because they know they'd have to turn over discovery, and they want no part of that. If only you had support from the media, from state election officials, and you're starting to get some support from the legislatures. But if you had the support from the election officials and the media, of course these machines would be examined. Of course they'd be turned over to a third party for further examination. Coming back to the complaint, she says in this filing that, okay, just on the grounds of this expert who says 289,000 illegal votes because of the machines. And then it continues, in addition to the Dominion computer fraud, this complaint identifies several additional categories of traditional voting fraud and Michigan election code violations, supplemented by healthy doses of harassment. This is Sidney's opinion, her complaint, not the Dominion statement. This is where the actual harassment is happening. Intimidation, discrimination, abuse, and even physical removal of Republican poll challengers to eliminate any semblance of transparency, objectivity, or fairness from the vote counting process. So that is your garden variety, stealing, cheating, just the old-fashioned ballot stuffing. There's all of that. The thousands and thousands of examples of that, all of the expert testimony, the witnesses, the affidavits, and then those machines. This same expert, Russell James Ramsland, he conducted another study, which again shows that it's just physically impossible what election officials are claiming that happened. It says here in the brief, the event reflected in the data are four spikes totaling 384,733 ballots allegedly processed in a combined interval of 2 hours and 38 minutes for four precincts, townships, in four Michigan counties, Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, and Kent. It says, based on Mr. Ramsland's analysis of the voting machines available at the referenced locations, he determined that the maximum processing capability during this period was only 94,867 ballots, so that there were 289,000 more ballots processed in the time available for processing in the four precincts and townships So even just that's how he comes up with the illegal votes, the fabricated votes, is that it would have been physically impossible to process that many in 2 hours and 38 minutes. Now, you're talking, you know, me reading this, I have no idea what the study was or what machines he was examining or what, but this is expert testimony. You get a lot of that in a court proceeding. This is expert testimony that a judge would have to listen to. It's pretty amazing. That's just a little bit of a summary of those two filings that happened late Wednesday night. Now, before that, this takes us back to Wednesday afternoon. You have the hearing, that Pennsylvania hearing where Rudy Giuliani's in there announcing these witnesses that all came forward. This went on for several hours. These witnesses who testified, they were there in person telling these senators, these state senators and congressmen and women, telling them what happened, what they were subjected to. Listen to one. This is actually an exchange between one of the witnesses and the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, clip 14.
Can you calculate how much of a vote that accounted for Biden and how much for Trump?
Close to 600,000. I think our figures were about 570,000-some-odd that all those spikes represent over time.
For Biden?
Correct.
And how much for Trump?
I think it was a little over 3,200.
You hear the crowd in the background. 600,000 for Biden, and then how much for Trump? 3,200. 3,200. That's one of the witnesses. Another one was a data scientist. His testimony went on for about 17 minutes. And listen to some of the numbers that he throws out, clip 15.
I want to see where the data is coming in. And I wanted to know the universe of the votes. Well, the universe of the votes was only supposed to be 120,000 mail-in ballots. We were told there were 6,000 ballots remaining. So I said, okay, we have a universe of 126,000 votes. And then when I get back there, the universe wasn't 126,000 votes. The universe was 200,000 votes.
And so, poof, just like that, these ballots magically appear. Now, there's an effort, a concerted effort, an intense effort to blot out the facts, to blot out the evidence, to ignore the... Sam and I were astounded yesterday and even to this morning to see how little there was in the media about Sidney Powell's lawsuits. There's virtually nothing out there. And then this hearing goes on Wednesday afternoon. There's two more coming up. And the reasoning behind this, coming from the Trump campaign team, is to get the message out, to go direct to the people. That's all that's ever worked for this president. That's why he tweets the way that he does. That's why he has so many press conferences. That's why he goes in front of cameras all the time, so that people can see him, so that they can see him live. Because he knows that the media are dishonest. He knows that they're not going to report the truth. He knows that they're not going to uncover evidence if it hurts their candidate. He knows that they'll lie. But the message is getting out. You can sense, if you're tuned in, you can sense that the tone has definitely shifted. And that more and more people, you already know about some of the polling suggesting that 80 or 90% of Republicans believe this was stolen, and even 33% of Democrats. Just looking at that from Vice President Biden's perspective, think about what he would be going up against him just in terms of popular opinion. If he were to become president and the whole nation knows it was a scam, the whole nation knows it was rigged. You've got lawsuits filed in Georgia, multiple lawsuits in Michigan. You've got lawsuits in Pennsylvania. You've got one pending in Nevada. You've got a hearing in Arizona on Monday, I believe. The message is beginning to get out. Where's the evidence? No evidence. There's no evidence. Where's your evidence that there was voter fraud? And then where's your evidence that there was enough voter fraud to overturn this? Well, the evidence is showing up. The evidence is at their doorstep. They won't open the door. They refuse to look into it. But because of President Trump and his team, and because of some of these Republican majorities, the evidence is being put on display, and it's devastating. At that Pennsylvania hearing on Wednesday, the president actually phoned in to address the state senators and congressmen and women, and he said it's going to be overturned. He spoke very confidently. He also thanked a lot of people up front. And then at the end of his address, and you'll see it's through a phone, so the footage here isn't great, but you'll hear the sound of the president thanking Rudy Giuliani. And listen to what he says about Mr. Giuliani, clip 16.
And I want to thank Rudy Giuliani for having the courage to do this, because there are other lawyers that backed down because they were being screamed at. Rudy is the greatest mayor in the history of New York, and there's a reason. He's got great courage, and he doesn't care. He wants to do what's right. And I told him the other day, Rudy, you were the greatest mayor in the history of New York, and you see what happened to New York without Rudy. You were the greatest mayor, but this is more important. What you're doing now is far more important than being a great mayor of the city of New York and being its greatest mayor by far. By the way, by far. This is going to be your crowning achievement because you're saving our country.
That's President Trump on Wednesday. Speaking of this being his crowning achievement, and noting there a couple of times that this is a mayor. This is a make fun of him, if you will. Make fun of his hair. Make fun of his speech, his glasses, whatever. But this is a man who has some courage. And he's fighting for the truth. And the president expressed his appreciation. Now, you'll remember, some of you, that President Trump himself said that his crowning achievement, that what he'll end up being most proud of when all of this is said and done, is exposing the lawlessness of the deep state, the lawlessness of the radical left. And as my father has said, this is why God has allowed this turn of events. It's to expose the corruption. He says in the article coming in this trumpet, by most appearances, Joe Biden will be America's next president, but I absolutely do not believe that at all. Mr. Trump will weather this storm too, regardless of what the media says or how things look right now. I'm confident Donald Trump will remain president. And then he says, I am also certain that we're about to see some of the biggest frauds exposed, perhaps forever. When we come back, we'll conclude today's show with a few more sound bites coming from the wild press conference yesterday with President Trump. And then I've got a few others on the docket here too, if we have time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. it will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I'd like to start on the historic nature of some of Joe Biden, the president-elect's pick.
The team that Biden has put forward is incredibly qualified, perhaps the most qualified cabinet that we're ever going to have.
A historic appointment. History-making.
A historic first. That's historic. Mm-hmm. Also historic.
Historic.
It's another historic pick there.
Is there any one of these picks in particular that kind of stands out to you?
I think they're all outstanding.
They are experienced. They are well-prepared. Boy, how refreshing is that?
And it's very refreshing.
I was talking to a Democrat who just said this also felt like the Avengers. It felt like we're being rescued from this craziness that we've all lived through from the last 4 years. And now here are the superheroes to come and save us all.
This is like being at the end of The Wizard of Oz.
Well, this is like the 1980s Celtics basketball team.
Trump really had the Z team. This is really the A team.
The A team for the country.
They are manifestly experienced and competent.
The word competent has been thrown around, qualified.
Very coherent.
Calmness.
Deep knowledge.
Kindness.
Deep commitment.
Professionalism. Is back. Expertise is back.
And it's also nice to take a look at a group of appointees that don't look like a restricted all-white country club.
Jake Sullivan, as the leader of the band, is the perfect choice.
She is perfectly suited.
With Alejandro, you're going to get competent, gifted leader, kind, thoughtful, brilliant. I can't think of a better person.
Let me get your thoughts about Tony Blinken.
I can't think of anybody better.
I think tonight, maybe
Absolutely.
I'll be able to start going to sleep.
I mean, all I have to say is everybody look up, because it's a different way of living now, right? We get all that. I mean, it is. I was ready to sing the whole Wiz soundtrack today.
All right, we'll sing it together.
There you go. There's your fake media. They love the fake foreign policy team selected by the fake president. Unbelievable. No wonder they're not looking at the evidence. No wonder they have nothing to say about these lawsuits. No wonder they're ignoring these hearings. The best ever. This is like he's got the Avengers. President Trump, his team... Team Z. Now we get the A team. That's a little montage put together by Grabian. Following the selections Joe Biden made earlier this week to fill out his foreign policy team. Here he was. This was, I believe, on Monday, clip six.
Today, I'm pleased to announce nominations and staff for critical foreign policy and national security positions in my administration. It's a team that will keep our country and our people safe and secure. And it's a team that reflects the fact that America is back, ready to lead the world, not retreat from it.
It's a team of deep state lobbyists. I think it was Peter Navarro who said that his picks look like a Miss Globalist pageant. Just some of the same old from the Antiochus administration. Leftovers from Barack Obama's time. And here's Martha Raddatz, just to give you one more media reaction. Here's what she had to say about Joe Biden's picks, clip seven.
This is about the least flashy team you could possibly get. They are deeply experienced. They are humble, and they are lifelong public servants. When I look at that group up there, and let's put John Kerry aside, because as we know, he was the Democratic nominee for president once, but they are not political. They are just career people.
Right. They're not political. These are just lifelong servants, public servants. They're not biased. You see, they see them that way because that's the way the media see themselves. They don't see themselves as political at all. That's why they shout down the president. That's why they shout down Kayleigh McEnany. That's why they're screaming at Vice President Pence. They think they're being, you know, guardians of the truth. They think they're objective. So they look at this team selected by Joe Biden, lifelong public servants who are humble and deeply experienced, just like Joe Biden himself. He is experienced as a politician. He's been in there nearly 40 years. But he's very political. And his team, same thing, very political. My father writes in that article I keep quoting, "The radical left in America have done everything in their power for the last 4 years to discredit and destroy President Donald Trump. They have spied. They have lied. They have cheated. They have broken laws, too numerous to count. You can't even keep up with them. So many broken laws." And yet, listen to John Brennan. He was in Obama's government, headed up the CIA. Listen to what he said the other day, clip 9.
"I served in government during several transitions of one administration to the other. I never had a worry that something was happening on the part of the outgoing president that really was going to hurt the incoming administration. But clearly, we have somebody who has acted very abnormally over the last 4 years in Donald Trump. And the fact that he is a very lame duck now and has basically less than 2 months left in position of the presidency, who knows what he might decide to do?"
I mean, that comment is especially rich, given what he himself was doing to try to undermine the incoming Trump administration in 2016. He says, I've never had to worry about an outgoing president lashing out at an incoming president until now. Until now, my father said in that article, they have broken laws too numerous to count. They have committed treason, trying to depose the duly elected government. And somehow President Trump has weathered all those storms. What the left is doing now, all this theater aimed at bullying people into accepting Joe Biden as president, is more of the same. It's just more of the same. It's just the latest chapter in this ongoing coup. And the president, of course, is onto them. He knows. He knows. Here he is yesterday in that press conference talking about the fraud of this recent election and the way an election should go. Clip 1.
"You know, an election should be a one-day deal. You walk in and you vote. And if you can't do it, if for some reason you're not feeling well or there's a problem, but what they did is they used COVID in order to defraud the people of this country. And the whole world is watching. And the whole world is laughing at our electoral process."
And he's right about that. Completely right. They've used COVID. They used it as an excuse to have all these mail-in ballots. And then here we have an election just rife with so much corruption and cheating. And the world is watching this spectacle. Here again is what he said yesterday, clip 2.
"But with all of the things I've done, this could be the most important, because there's been voter fraud going on, but never at this scale. Tens of millions of ballots have been sent out to people that didn't even want them. Many people, and I know you've heard, many people have received 2, 3, and 4 ballots. And many people have taken those 2, 3, and 4 ballots and they voted them. This election was a fraud. It was a rigged election. I mean, I hate to say it, but this was a rigged election. At the highest level, it was a rigged election."
At the highest level, he said, it went all the way up to the top. And that's something we're looking into more, this directive from Jay Johnson, just as the Obama administration was going out. And the things that were put in motion to not only spy on President Trump and his supporters, but to also get the government, the deep state, more involved in elections with these machines and everything else. He said, "This of all the things I've done, this could be the most important. This could be the most important crowning achievement," just like he said about Rudy. And of course, he's one of only just a few who are willing to stand up to this. He's getting no help from the media. He had this clash with one of the media members in the conference yesterday and listened to him, the president, that is, putting the media in their place. Clip five.
If the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden, will you concede?
Well, if they do, they made a mistake because this election was a fraud. Just so you understand, this election was a fraud. So, no, I can't say that at all. I think it's a possibility. They're trying to look between you people. Don't answer. Don't talk to me that way. You're just a lightweight. Don't talk to me that way. I'm the president of the United States. Don't ever talk to the president that way.
That's the president of the United States telling the media to be respectful. They're, of course, not going to do that, but good for him. Think of the attacks he's been weathering, the storm that he's weathered, as my father said in that article, for 4 years. And this is the latest stormy controversy. One last statement from why Donald Trump will remain America's president. My father says, this means this nation is about to be shocked. I believe you're going to see frauds exposed like you've never even imagined. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you Monday.